This is Remembering Yugoslavia, the show exploring the memory of a country that no longer exists. I'm your promoter, Peter Korchnak. Like everywhere else outside the English-speaking Northern Hemisphere world, punk rock in the former Yugoslavia was both a marginal affair and an import from the UK. Yugoslav music lovers were free to travel to the West and discover new trends there and buy records, including punk. The first punk bands in Yugoslavia, Pankrti, the Bastards from Ljubljana, and Paraf, the Initials from Rijeka, both of whom are now legendary, set the tone for the scene in 1976-77, about the time The Clash released their debut album. With the speed of a guitar solo, the punk bug spread to Pula, Zagreb, Novi Sad and Belgrade, as well as Skopje and Sarajevo. Električni orgazam, electric orgasm, Prljavo kazalište, dirty theater, Termiti, termites, and Zabranjeno pušenje, no smoking, all started out as punk bands before crescendoing into the various riffs of new wave, as did Paraf. In the 1980s, dozens of additional punk bands emerged. Again, as everywhere, Yugoslav punks criticized and condemned the mainstream. This, in Yugoslavia, often took on the form of critiquing the socialist system itself, the police, the government, the ideology. But, as has been observed, not necessarily with the goal of bringing it down altogether. Perhaps the Yugoslav punkers suspected the end of socialism would be the end of Yugoslavia. This is one reason Pankrti and Kud Idioti from Pula included the Italian communist anthem Bandiera Rossa on their albums, or why Paraf sang Živjela Jugoslavia, Long Live Yugoslavia. In other words, those of Jello Biafra of the Dead Kennedys, if you love God, burn a church. The writer Jonathan Busfield has described his first encounter with Yugoslav politics thusly. I was walking behind a group of local teenagers in Trogir in 1985. One of them was carrying a small rucksack on which she had written in felt pen the words Sex Pistols, The Doors, and Tito, followed by a five-pointed star. Conversely, the regime tolerated punk and punk rockers because it was safer to keep them in view, releasing the steam here and there on albums or at live concerts, than to have them suppressed underground where they would plot who knows what. That said, punks did see limits put on their works and experience some repression. The Nazi punk affair from 1981 was a prominent example. Note to self, a badge that says Nazi punks fuck off over a crossed out swastika, don't wear that in a socialist country. Punk rock in Yugoslavia emerged and developed as a way to blaspheme the government and almost everything that our parents' generation believed in, wrote Bosnian and Croatia writer Milenko Jergović in the New York Times in 2017 when Yugoslav punk was celebrating 40 years. The artistry consisted in writing songs that would be more anti-establishment than any before, but would not be censored. There was just one topic that was untouchable, Tito. Everything else was allowed. One could sing more or less openly against everything, even against communism. End quote. For context, in the Eastern Bloc Czechoslovakia, only a handful of punk bands existed, unbeknownst to most people. Reading about them today, I've only heard of about a couple. In my part of the former country, Slovakia, there was literally one punk band, Zona A, in the population of 5 million, formed in 1984 and not allowed to publish until after the commies were out. Simply put, concluded Jergović, in contrast to Leonid Brezhnev of the Soviet Union, Tito did not think that young people with drums and guitars would bring down the state. And in the end, he was right. Musically,
Yugoslav punk had very distinct DNA of Balkan folk. It seemed that wherever it came from in Yugoslavia had a different flavor, and that tended to come from regional folk. So whether it was Devda or Klapa or Tamburica, you know.
Barry Phillips was for a short period in the early 1980s the bassist for the punk band from Gloucester, England called D-Mob. At the time, and for another 30 years, he knew nothing about Yugoslav punk.
I chased a dream to be a musician for 20-odd years, eventually giving up in the mid-90s, early to mid-90s.
Phillips spoke to me from his home in a village in the Scottish Highlands. After his music career, Phillips spent most of his adult life in Sheffield, an industrial city in central England. He turned himself into a historian specializing in modern European history, authoritarianism and fascism, the Spanish Civil War, and oral history.
By the way, founding Pankrti member Gregor Tomc is a sociology professor at the University of Ljubljana. As Phillips quips, punk is not dead, it just got a PhD.
Then Phillips, the former punk rocker, joined the British Civil Service as a policy advisor and later a speechwriter. His top credits include various secretaries of state and education, as well as, in part one, Tony Blair. And most recently, he worked as an education technology policy advisor to the European Union.
And then I dedicated about 7 or 8 years pretty much full time to either playing again. I went back to playing music in a French punk band.
Until 12 years ago, when things took a hard Yugoslav turn. Before we get to that story, I want to dedicate a drum solo to Aleksandar, Kamila and Nina. Thank you all for your recent headbanging contributions. You truly rock.
Remembering Yugoslavia has been, is, and will remain independent. Call it guerrilla, call it punk, thanks to contributions from people like Aleksandar, Kamila, and Nina. So if you haven't already, join this trio and many others on the stage and help keep the podcast alive. Go to rememberingyugoslavia.com/donate and rock out with your card out and jam out with your clams out.
1976, when punk came along, I was, 14, living in an ex-coal mining village down on the border between England and Wales, so very provincial kind of area. Punk was utterly in my life fairly quickly. We would travel 50 miles to see every punk gig within that radius.
Barry Phillips again.
I formed punk bands, as you do in those kind of places, little tiny villages, there's nothing else to do. 1980, a friend of mine had joined D-Mob and become the singer, and he asked me to join D-Mob.
Phillips played in another band, the Blitz Boys, which occasionally supported D-Mob and got some play on John Peel's BBC show. D-Mob was a multiracial teenage street punk band formed in Gloucester, England in 1978. Their first release was titled Anti-Police. At one point, they were support for U2.
D-Mob were building something of a reputation by 1980, some of it notorious. They were very much a street punk band as opposed to, although that wasn't a phrase then, as opposed to the kind of art school punk side of things, very representative of being provincial, if you like.
That notorious reputation had to do with fights breaking out at their shows. The testosterone-fueled teenagers from a coal mining culture, as Phillips describes the members, were no strangers to fists and boots. Some brawls were initiated by local motorbike gangs, others by skinheads. But it wasn't just lungheads and neo-Nazis who took issue with punk.
Something that's missed now, and this is quite important to the story actually, is that back in 76, 77, we punks were really incredibly in the minority. If you listen to everybody now, everybody had some sympathy with punk or was into punk, but everybody hated us. The straight kids hated us, the bikers hated us, the police hated us, the politicians hated us, older people hated us, everybody hated us. So we were very much a minority, and that formed your identity very, very much. And I think it's part of your identity that it formed very early on, and it kind of carries with you right through life, having been that kind of minority, or perhaps we were just kind of those kind of people. We were teenagers, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old, but almost everybody who hated us was a mature adult, you know. I mean, apart from the fact that our peers hated us anyway, the fact that there were questions asked in Parliament in Westminster about these punks, how they were destroying society. Obviously, the God Save the Queen, Sex Pistols record was banned. We were very much a minority. There was a fair amount of violence visited upon us, even down in, well, especially, I think, perhaps the provinces. It's very easy now to think that everybody was a punk because I look on Facebook and see lots of people my age who are all seem to have been into punk at the time, but I don't remember that being the case then. I don't remember hordes of people helping me out when I was getting jumped by groups of bikers or the straight kids, the kind of towny kids, the kids who had the big flared trousers and were into disco, you know, at the time.
Phillips played with D-Mob only for about a year, including on tours with Angelic Upstarts, Discharge, and Exploited, and
I was very lucky to be in the band at the time that No Room For You EP was released, and I played on the tour to promote that.
No Room For You ended up being D-Mob's biggest hit, so to speak.
It was pretty obvious to me from the first time that Miff, who wrote it, that it was the cracking song. It had such a sing-along chorus. It was one of those that was visceral. It really hit you straight in the gut. It wasn't particularly cerebral, but then it wasn't stupid either, you know. It wasn't that lowest common denominator kind of thing. So the song was about a venue that we used to go to, which was this old crumbling motel between the cities of Gloucester and Cheltenham, which is about 70 kilometres from Bristol and about 70 kilometres from Birmingham. And this old motel had this big kind of dance. Well, it wasn't a big dance hall. It held about 300 or 400. But almost every punk band came to this venue called Whitcomb Lodge. And it was kind of our venue. The police used to turn up in their undercover gear, which was just hilarious because they would be so easy to spot all the time. But the place was pretty grungy, you know, but it was our place and everybody played there. There was a lot of violence at the time and there was a lot at Whitcomb Lodge, partly because of it being between the cities of Gloucester and Cheltenham where the skinheads didn't like each other and all of those things. But there would be one, two gigs there every single week from about 1977 through to the end of 1979. You know, I mean, I can remember being there and seeing, in 1979, seeing Echo and the Bunnymen and Teardrop Explodes, and I counted the crowd as 44 people. That's the kind of place we're talking about. And at the end of 1979, it closed down, much to our sorrow. So the song was actually about the closing down of that venue. It was our one kind of venue. they've got no room for you is the kind of tagline to it. I thought it was very cleverly written. I've heard this a myth since, because you could take it in many ways. It, you know, had multiple applications. But it was it's a simple song. It's a straight three chords kind of blues thing with a rock and roll bass line and this military drumming. So, yeah, I knew it was a good song in it. But, and it always, always went down really, really well with the crowds once we started playing it, even before it was released. So it was a great live song. We had it pressed up in, you know, you got it pressed up at those times in 2,000 or 3,000 at a time, and it sold out each time it was pressed. I don't know, probably somewhere between 7,000 and 10,000 in the end before the band split up, something like that. But it was then picked up, and it was on the original Punk and Disorderly album, which is something of an iconic album.
The 1982 compilation Punk and Disorderly featured 16 songs by contemporary punk bands from the UK, plus the only Americans on the album and the one band that was familiar to this punk ignoramus, the Dead Kennedys. The now classic compilation, which spawned two sequels, has been in hindsight described as a landmark compilation and a defining moment in early 80s punk. Punk and Disorderly reached number 48 in the UK charts and spent 8 months on the British indie chart, peaking at number 3. With Punk and Disorderly, No Room for You
got a new lease of life. All of a sudden, a track was in the UK, the proper charts, not just the independent charts. Then I didn't really think about it again after 1981 when I left the band.
As Phillips went about his writing business in the ensuing decades, several bands around the world covered No Room for You, in their own languages, no less. In 1987, the Mexican legend Three Souls in My Mind made it into El Tacón Dorado. In 1997, Pero Lovshin of Pankrti himself included a cover titled Se Spomnite Pankeri, Remember Punks, on his solo album Zadni Križarski Pohod. In 2001, the Basque band Caótico made their own version, En el Barrio de Latón, for their album Mundo Caótico. In 2002, the Portland, Oregon punk band Defiance included a pretty faithful cover of No Room for You on their album Out of the Ashes. I lived in Portland from 2004 to 2019 and had no idea this band existed. That's how no punk I am. I'm playing the song here with the kind permission of the band and the song's author. Buy their music. All the social and purchase links are at rememberingyugoslavia.com/podcast.
Yeah!
Pretty good, right?
In 2016, the English Texas spoof band Badass Cowboys made a country folk version, and Phillips has found one additional Mexican version as well.
So, in 1981, Phillips left D-Mob. Fast forward 3 decades to the summer of 2011. Prince William is married, Ratko Mladic is arrested, Osama bin Laden is dead, and Barry Phillips is reborn.
One night I found a video of a band from Lowell, Michigan, a band called Al and the Black Cats, playing No Room for You in a club in Zagreb.
YouTube user Jura Oi Oi Oi, who runs a personal punk-related website Oi Jebote Blog, posted the clip on June 1st, 2009. It has 2,300 views as of mid-August 2023.
And this was the first I'd really thought about it for 30 years. So I just posted this
on Facebook,
tagging all of my friends who had anything to do with D-Mob and people from back, the old punks that were the young punks at my time, and tagged them and just said, look at this, you know, there's a band covered our song. And a few minutes later, I got it to my inbox, a message from somebody who I'd never met before or heard from in Kragujevac, who said, you do know this song's famous in Yugoslavia. Obviously, I had no idea whatsoever that this song was famous in Yugoslavia. And I must admit, I didn't actually believe him to begin with, but I took it at face value, did some searches.
And found out there was one other cover version of No Room for You. The Croatian punk rock legend from Pula, Kud Idioti, Cultural Artistic Society Idiots, covered the song with Croatian language lyrics that roughly followed the original's meaning. The song, To nije mjesto za nas, It's Not a Place for Us, was the title track on Kud Idioti's third album, Glupost je neuništiva, Stupidity is Indestructible, released in 1982. We don't go there anymore, those doors are closed to people like us. I see different people here. They say it's still the same, but all is different without us. It's not a place for us, sang Kud Idioti a decade after D-Mob. Kud Idioti had started out in 1981. The acronym KUD, K-U-D, stands for Kulturno Umjetničko Društvo, which translates as Cultural Artistic Society. KUDs were, and still are, folklore music and dance groups across the former Yugoslavia. Kud Idioti released their first album in 1986, and the following year they won the Subotica Youth Festival. The band enjoyed great popularity during the 1990s, including in the post-Yugoslav abroad. In 2012, the frontman, Branko Crnastusta, died from cancer and the band disbanded.
There are several uploads of both the original song by D-Mob and the cover by Kud Idioti on YouTube. As of mid-August 2023, the most popular D-Mob video, a fan-made collage, has 177,000 views. The most popular Kud Idioti video, featuring the band photo, has 543,000 views. Though to be fair, a great part of Kud Idioti's hits would have followed Tusta's death. The actual music video spot, which may have been Kud Idioti's very first and is quite hilarious, has 33,000 views.
At any rate, Phillips was hooked.
Funnily enough, I was still working at the time on an education project, and I was sent to Belgrade quite soon after, and I was sat with two Croatian academics, both of whom were about, I would say, about 40 years old, and they started talking to me about what I'd done before, because we were talking about creative education, and I mentioned D-Mob, and I asked them if they'd ever heard this song, and I played them the song, and they both said, yeah, of course we know that song, meaning the Kud Idioti version, and I said, well, ours was the original.
Phillips, being a historian, things snowballed from there.
I contacted the other members of the band. None of them knew anything about this at all. We had no idea whatsoever. So I just started making some inquiries and literally unsolicited fired off a few messages to people. I found emails and Facebook profiles and fired off messages thinking I might get one or two people to talk to me. And just about everybody in former Yugoslavia replied and said, oh, great, great to hear from you. Come talk to me.
Phillips writes, the discovery was as surreal as it was baffling and intriguing. Here you are, you know, minding your business. This old song resurfaces in this fashion, a cover version that you had no idea existed. How did you feel?
Well, it was spectacular. It really was. It gave me a new lease of life. I felt like a kid when it happened. You're in your early 50s or whatever I was in the late 40s. And all of a sudden, there was something that I hadn't realized that I'd achieved. You know, it's like a bonus, a huge life bonus. I'd trained as a historian, and I was making my living writing at the time, writing and researching, basically, but not necessarily the things that I was that passionate about. So it pretty quickly became obvious to me that I needed to follow this through and track it down. It was such a perfect opportunity. I wasn't expecting to try and find out everything about Yugoslavia, but it was such a lens. It was kind of a key that opened doors to me, but it was also a lens through which to view this whole thing and understand a lot more about it. So I don't have the words for how exciting it was at the time. I don't have the words for how rewarding it became afterwards. I don't mean financially, obviously, but how rewarding in the amount that I'd learned from the people that I met in former Yugoslavia and the friendships I've made as well.
When I first heard this story, it reminded me of Sixto Rodriguez, who made music in Detroit in the 1960s, including the song Sugar Man, but did not make it as a musician, so he worked as a construction worker for the rest of his life. About the time Phillips began his journey through Yugoslav punk, Rodriguez learned he had been super famous in South Africa for decades. There's a great documentary about this called Searching for Sugar Man, released in 2012. Rodriguez had died a few days before Phillips and I spoke.
I did an interview with a Russian guy the other week about the book, and he said it reminds me of the Searching for Sugar Man, but in a strange kind of Cold War punk version of. And I'd never watched Searching for Sugar Man, so my wife and I literally sat down and watched it about 5 days ago now.
Tell us about the journey of discovery of Yugoslav punk rock and the book.
So I went into this very quickly with a book in mind. So when I say very quickly, within a year or so of getting this message and then doing a little bit of research into it, I thought, there's a book here. Part of this was I'd begun a PhD about 15 years before and got 2 years into it and given it up because of work. And I was going to go back to the PhD, and then I thought, why am I doing a PhD? I don't need to be a called doctor this or a doctor that. Why don't I spend that time doing something that I really, really want to do? So what I tried to do was apply all of the same rigor that I would have applied to a PhD to this book. But I wanted to be able to communicate with people who wouldn't necessarily ever see a PhD. But it was a much looser kind of discipline in terms of how I was able to behave within that kind of scaffolding. So I built up these networks through people there were, you know, who would put me in touch. Journalists and music critics were incredibly helpful. And then it was a case of plotting the journey to try and interview as many people as I could in the, whatever it was, 2.5 weeks. I made the decision that it needed to be done in one journey.
The result of the journey is the book In Search of Tito's Punks, On the Road in the Country That No Longer Exists. Out now in hardcover from Intellect in Bristol and Chicago, the book is available for sale online and in every good bookstore. And check out the Remembering Yugoslavia Instagram for a giveaway of one copy. The book is essentially three books in one. The travel bit is an account of Phillips' trip in 2017 to the punky parts of the former Yugoslavia using public transport. He went to Zagreb, Rijeka and Pula, to Ljubljana and to Belgrade, Novi Sad and Kragujevac.
I felt it needed to be based around the centers of punk and the capitals of the northernmost states of ex-Yugoslavia, because those were the ones I could travel to at the time, to get to the maximum number of people within the space of 2.5 weeks or so.
Secondly, there are full transcripts of long interviews with some of the greats of the Yugoslav and post-Yugoslav music scene. Sale Veruda of Kud Idioti, Pere Lovšin of Pankrti, and Darko Rundek of Haustor are probably the most prominent. And there's also Robert Miff Smith of D-Mob, who wrote No Room for You, Petar Janjatovic, who has been on this show a couple of times, and music critics, promoters, and other musicians.
I just wanted to get the picture of what Yugoslavia had been during a time of punk, what punk had been to them, and how their lives had changed since. Pretty much everybody that I contacted had known the song. Pero Lovšan from Pankrti, for instance, shot me back a message straight away saying, what a song, I've recorded it myself and here's my version. So funnily enough, one of the only people who hadn't heard it was when we were in Ljubljana, I managed to time it to be there at Pankrti's 40th anniversary gig, which was just phenomenal. And after I'd got the tickets, it was announced that the special guest was none other than one of my heroes, Glenn Matlock, one of the original Sex Pistols and a fantastic bass player. And then Pero told me the day after that he'd played Glenn the song and Glenn had never heard it. So the one person who'd never heard it was the English punk.
Another storyline follows Phillips behind the scenes of some of the trials at the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia in The Hague, where he lived for about a decade. Like a good punk, he went against the advice of people in the former Yugoslavia, telling him to avoid writing, even if it was for English-speaking audiences, about politics and war.
It was within my own parameters, remember, so I didn't have a PhD supervisor saying this is a crazy idea.
Phillips originally wrote the book, posted an e-version online, and later got approached by a publisher, which trimmed the word count a bit. At the end of the book, in a coda of sorts, Vinko Baric wrote a timeline of Yugoslav punk. In a positive review, Nathan Brown over at Louder Than War wrote that the book was very well written and properly researched, and that it manages to simultaneously get under the skin of punk rock in the former Yugoslavia, while covering recent history and providing a travel guide come road trip narrative while still being an enjoyable read.
The punk poet Attila the Stockbroker heartily recommended the book in his column for the Morning Star, the only English-language socialist daily newspaper in the world, saying it is beautifully written. The one flaw of the book is a pet peeve of mine, so I'm going to step on a soapbox for a minute. The flaw is not Phillips's, let me be clear, it's the publisher's. I'm talking about the choice of type in the design. The book title, rendered on the cover, contains characters from the Russian alphabet. They are not in the Cyrillic alphabet. As so often elsewhere, including in the promotion of the movie Underground, they're used instead of Latin letters to somehow supposedly convey communism. The Russian E, I, which looks like a flipped Latin N to substitute that letter, and Ya, which looks like a flipped R to substitute for R. It's not only inaccurate, it's a cliché and, to me personally, annoying. And it makes the title read, E.E. Soyach of Tito's Pikes. Soapbox session over. Either way, the journey has not ended with the book for Phillips.
I've continued researching this. I set up a Facebook group to go with the book. We carry on sharing information about Yugoslav punk with the people who are in the book, but a whole bunch of other people as well. It's about 400 or 500 people now, no more. But I'm learning a lot from that still, and I'm hoping that that's also communicating to a lot of English-speaking people as well. So that's continued for the last 3-4 years and will continue. My obsession has continued in that respect. I am still following everything through. I'm still in touch with almost all of the people, and I'm still following new music that's coming out from former Yugoslavia. A whole new world opened up in 2013, 14 or whatever. So I'd got 30 odd years music to catch up with then. So I'm still catching up with bands from, you know, 1980, 81, 82. So I'm still discovering music from then as well. It's like a kid in a sweet shop.
Repetitor, Goribor, Pogon Bogode, and Mort are some of the active contemporary bands Philip cited as his favorites. But
I haven't added to my tattoo collection with any Yugoslav tattoos. But
a Croatian language version of In Search of Tito's Punks is due out in the spring of 2024. In the meantime,
I'm working on a couple of books of relevance to Yugoslavia at the moment. But the one that's following on from Tito's Punks is, at the moment, it's called working title In Search of Goths and Spomenik and New Primitives. As I said, I decided that geographically I was limited in the first visit. So the plan is to go back to Croatia, Slovenia and Serbia, but I also want to go to the southern states more. And I'm particularly interested in the whole kind of more the post-punk, dark, eerie, choral stuff. Bands like Mizar and the whole kind of crossover between the liturgical, orthodox crossed with goth kind of thing. I want to look at the whole new primitive movement that was centered around Sarajevo, too.
The other book Phillips is working on is about Scottish nurses who served in Serbia during World War I, one of whom was from the village where he lives now. That was Agent Tajne Sile with the cover of a song written for and made famous by Emir Kusturica's debut film Sjećaš li se Dolly Bell? Do you remember Dolly Bell? Na morskome plavom žalu, at the blue beach, is about a boy who falls in love with a blonde at the coast. It's one of my favorite 80s songs from the former Yugoslavia. Agent Tajne Sile covers popular songs from that disappeared country. It is a side project of Nenad Milic, the frontman of Tito's Boys, a punk band from Rovinj in Istria. In a way, Tito's Boys has carried on punk's legacy decades after the genre, or dare I say movement, first flipped the world a bird. Milic is from Karlovac, a town some 50 kilometers southwest from Zagreb. In part due to his father's ethnicity as a Serb, and in part due to the town being in the thick of war things, his family moved via Germany to Istria during the 90s war. It was there, in 1998-99, that Milic started his own punk band and was its singer.
It was a typical high school band. I was an outsider in the school because I came from another part of Croatia to Istria with all the refugees. And then there was a few other outsiders and we started the band just for fun in the school. And then it went on to something more serious with the years. And then when you get serious, your ideas got more serious and your views political, and then the problems started.
So why call it Tito's Boys?
Because I'm a Yugoslavian kid and I was kind of branded by Yugoslavia and marked, you know. And then you have that transfer as you are 11, 12 years old boy into another system and you don't understand what's going on. You had a nice life and then parents worked and everything was kind of ideal. And then it's a war there and blah, blah, blah. And it was a revolt with that name, you know, or to show that we belong to that part of our selves, not to this one, what is happening now. You need to imagine we were 18 years old. It was 98. It was just 3 years after the war and we all had bad experiences. There were still a lot of refugees in Istria. There was this post-war trauma. And as a punk rocker, what could be better to provocate, you know, like just 8 years after the fall of Yugoslavia to call yourself. I think it was the best punk name at the moment and in the Balkans, you know. We just didn't have any promotions or label. We were underground band. But, you know, if there had been somebody who could push us out, and I think we would be like Sex Pistols, you know, in all the newspapers, you know, wherever, you know, with that name. And I think still there isn't a better name for a band, you know.
As more than one interlocutor in a recent documentary about the band said, and I'm not quite paraphrasing, it really took big cojones, Jaja, to name a band after Tito in Croatia, especially while Tuđman was still alive and in power.
We stand for freedom and liberty and you know, expressing yourself and being what you are and being always in contradiction, actually, with yourself, what punk is, and with the others, and like always to be contra. If somebody say it's black, you say it's white. I think it's the purpose of punk rock to always to ask, to re-ask, and to actually not to agree with the current political or economical or whatever situation. So you can't be mainstream if you're a punk rocker. If you're 18 years old, your perspective and your vocabulary and everything isn't so good as if you are 31, okay? With 18 years old, you're stupid, you know? And our music kind of was reflecting the daily problems we had, you know, with police or, you know, the regular punk rock teams, you know, against politicians and so on. Because Istria has this funny vibe, and we were always trying to pack that in a kind of, you know, liberating, relaxing sounds and good punk rock. Just with the years, the teams get... Actually, the same teams, but they got focused with better words and better, you know, better dictionary and better, you know, as you go on and read more, that your song's getting better and getting better. But this is always the same themes, I think, in all the bands in the world, you know, daily problems, girls, politics, you know, revolt to the system, you know, ecology. It's always the same problems we need to address, you know, nothing's changed.
In Musty Vlast, Fat and Power, Tito's Boys sing of demagogues and thieving politicians. The song appeared on their debut album, Electro Istria, released in 2002, and re-released on the 20th anniversary last year. This live version is from the upcoming album Live in Ljubljana 2012.
Wow.
from 2002 until 2006, we were gigging constantly, and we had a lot of problems. We were beaten up. War veterans went in some villages or small towns, went to the gigs with bombs or with guns, and our cars get destroyed after the gigs. In 2002, as we started, there were still a lot of skinheads, Nazi skinheads around. Nowadays, there is no skinheads more, you know, because there is no need of skinheads, because you have only nationalists in Croatia and Serbia. So there's no need for an extra cell of right-wing nationalists, because everybody is a fucking nationalist. So they're not anymore punks too, you know, in Croatia. 2007, we released our second album, and then we said, like, fuck off, we need to go a little bit west. And then we started to play outside Slovenia and Germany and Italy. And until 2009, we played only outside Croatia. We didn't have any more gigs in Croatia. First of all, because of we started to get boycotted, and nobody wanted to organize our gigs. 2009, we had a first gig over in Serbia, Novi Sad, you know, that was stopped with special forces, with snipers and with dogs, you know, and things like that, you know. Skinheads were beating people up two streets away from the gig and things like that. So we said, like, fuck off, we don't want to go there too. And then...
In 2011, Milic left Istria.
It's usual thing to migrate if the situation is not working in your country. And in my country, it's not working for the last 31 years. It's not the Istria like it was, no, before. It's, there is no difference now if you would go to Istria or another part of Croatia. It's just Croatia, you know, with all its bad and good sides. And I was at the breaking point where I couldn't do anything with my life anymore in Istria because of my political views and everything, you know, because those are kind of serious years where you need to start think about your future and, you know, earn some money and start. And then doors were closed for me, you know.
As Dimab would say, and do you know the reason why it all fell through? They got no room for you.
It's not easy if you're not politically correct. And I think I'm not politically correct.
You're a punk rocker, right?
But yeah, it depends. Today, punk rock is going mainstream. It's watered down. It has nothing to do more with punk rock 30, 45, 50 years ago.
After some time in the US and Canada, Milic moved again to Germany in 2014. He spoke with me from that bastion of Yugos in Germany that's Munich, where he works as a school teacher. He told me Tito's boy's guitarist still lives in Istria, the bass player also lives in Croatia and has disavowed the band, and the drummer moved to Slovenia. In the meantime, Milic has been re-releasing remastered versions of Tito's boy's albums on his label WTF Records.
It's a problem to release something in Croatia because, first of all, because of our heritage and our name, and secondly, it is the best way, you know, to do it yourself. You have the full control, and as much as you invest and as much as you promote yourself, it's getting back to you, you know. So you can't blame anybody. Everything is in your hands.
WTF Records releases and promotes music from the former Yugoslavia.
You know, I have certain requirements, yeah, for the bands. You know, they need to be left, and they, nobody of their parents should be in any parties or something. It's hard. You can't find bands like that. Everybody has a bloody hands down there.
Tito's boys ended up releasing 3 albums in all. No Room For You most likely got to the former Yugoslavia via the Punk and Disorderly compilation.
I think there's not a single person in Yugoslavia who didn't has that compilation. It's actually a really good compilation. You know, if you listen to that compilation, that's maybe one of the best songs. And through that compilation, I think Kud Idioti get to that song too. Then they just covered it in Serbo-Croatian. It's kind of a punk anthem for us.
Back in the Yugoslav times, whether young musicians heard songs on the Italian or Luxembourgish radio, or on records licensed in their country or brought in from trips abroad, there was sort of an unspoken competitiveness in copying their favorites and making the best copies possible. In fact, in the 1950s and 60s BYR, that's before Yugorock, verbatim copied Western music is what people played at shows and dances. Milic, who goes by Nedo Milic on some of his more recent work, was one of the people Phillips contacted for the book.
What does it feel like, this guy from a band that made the anthem of punk rock and it was big in the former Yugoslavia and Croatia? So how did that feel and how did that friendship develop?
It was kind of surreal, you know, like, what the fuck? You know, you have some heroes or something like that, and then you achieve the point in your life where you can meet them or talk to them or play with them, you know, like, it's always... The first time is always like surreal, you know, like you can't believe it. It's kind of like a external body experience. It was the same like when we played with Offspring in 2009, you know. They chose to be their support band in Zagreb, and it was like also to meet them and play for them, you know, before them. I couldn't believe it, you know. That was the same with the Barry, you know, as we talked, and I'm like, I can't believe it. You know, I'm talking to the guy from demo, which songs I was listening, you know, every day from morning until the evening, you know, in my mid school, you know, like I was a young punk, and, you know, like I'm talking now to him, you know. And he also recorded a bass on my solo record, Nedo Mili Cooperative, you know. He recorded the bass, and he wrote also notes on the cover itself.
In 2016, WTF Records released a compilation album of its own. Za Tebe, For You, features 25 covers of Kud Idioti songs by various artists from across the former Yugoslavia, including Dubioza Collective, Lažni Franz, Pankrti, Psihomodo Pop, and Rambo Amadeus, as well as the Horkestar Choir and the City of Pula Brass Orchestra.
It was kind of a thing I needed to do, because in Istria we played a lot in Pula, and we were friends with Tusta and singer from Kud Idioti and the band, and they went to our concerts, and, you know, we played with them a few times, and they, when we went to Pula, we get drunk with them, and they came to our concerts, and they were like local heroes, and they were also, you know, like heroes for me, Tusta and everybody. And as I went to Canada 2012, Tusta was very ill, you know, and we like played humanitarian concert for him, and his dad catched me in Canada, and I was also there alone in Canada, you know, on the other side of the continent, and, you know, like you're one of your youth idols is dead, and you're totally down, and you can't go to his, you know, funeral, and you are there, and it seemed like the whole world fall apart, you know. And then 2014, I decided, okay, I need to do that. I need to do this tribute, you know, not for punks in Yugoslavia, I need to do it for myself, you know, like I'm from Istria, and, you know, I owe that to myself, and I owe that to that band. And then I started to, because we played a lot, I had a lot of contacts, I started to contact everybody around the Balkans, you know, big bands. I done the compilation from my point of view, from my vision, through the stories I had with them, and from the things I know about them, and from the bands I know they were friends with, and from the bands they told me as Tusta was alive, the bands he liked. And, you know, I wanted to tell the story with this compilation.
Kud Idioti's cover of No Room For You, To Nije Mjesto Za Nas, fell to the Croatian rock legend Hladno Pivo, Cold Beer. As with all the other songs from WTF Records you hear on today's show, including the intro jingle riff, I'm playing it with the kind permission of Nenad Milic. Find the label on Bandcamp and buy their music. Links are at rememberingyugoslavia.com/podcast. The second part of the mix I'm going to leave you with today is a version performed by the Jazz Istra Orchestra at a concert in Pula earlier this year, featuring Kud Idioti covers. Goes to show how far No Room For You and To Nije Mjesto Za Nas made it in the end.
Sada viđam tu.
Covers of a cover, we've gone full postmodern here. To Nije mjesto za nas is fully part of the musical canon in the former Yugoslavia, particularly in Croatia and even more so in Istria. And on some level, it all speaks to what Yugoslavia was about. Take the best from the rest and make it ours. Kind of like America does. And on another level, it speaks to the fact that Yugoslav culture production has enduring value. I've been humming and singing No Room For You to myself for the past 2 weeks straight. It's catchy, it's got a good rhythm that is very helpful while doing yard work. I sing the chorus, "They've got no room for you at all," to each weed before I pull it. Next on Remembering Yugoslavia.
I really wanted to show people those replicas, those 3D prints, you know, because the people go there for a purpose of leaving the Yugoslavia, and this was the best time.
In the next installment of Inspired by Yugoslavia, I'll talk to 3D makers of monuments and a graphic designer, and a hobbyist board game maker calls in. Tune in wherever you listen to podcasts, follow to make sure you don't miss out, and subscribe to support us. That's all for this episode of Remembering Yugoslavia. Thank you for listening. Find additional information, embeds, links to purchase all the music you've heard, and the transcript of this episode at rememberingyugoslavia.com/podcast. While you're there, and before you go, take a moment to get a ticket for the show. There's always room here for you and your support. Strum to rememberingyugoslavia.com/donate, and as today's chorus goes, rock out with your card out and jam out with your clams out. Outro music courtesy of Robert Petrić, additional music courtesy of Defiance, Nenad Milić and WTF Records, and Jazz Istra. Buy their music. All the links are at rememberingyugoslavia.com/podcast. The track Rainmaker by Petar Alargić, licensed under Creative Commons. I am Petar Korchniak.